I'm Tavis Smiley, and I'm thrilled to have you tuned into our program. And this hour, what an amazing and spirited conversation, spirit-filled conversation we just had for the hour with Michael Eric Dyson. We closed that conversation. We began the conversation commemorating, of course, Dr. King, who was murdered 56 years ago today in Memphis. We spent a great deal of time just honoring this person that both Dyson and I believe is the greatest American this country's ever produced. And as we moved through that hour, we segued, as only Dyson could help us do, from King to Beyonce. And he linked those two together in a beautiful and brilliant way. And so we spent a few minutes talking about Cowboy Carter, the new project from Beyonce. And you're listening to a track right now from that album. Nice segue into this hour, because speaking of country music, after a century of whitewashing, is country music finally reckoning with its relationship to black folks? That's our topic in this hour. That's our topic in this hour. I'm pleased to be joined in a moment by DePaul University professor Francesca Royster, who will help us celebrate black country music, which is also the title of her award-winning book. We asked her which Beyonce track she wanted to start with today, and she chose this particular track. Let me shut up for a minute and let you hear a little bit more of it, and we'll ask her why she wanted to start our conversation with this track.
Salted tears beyond my gaze. Can you stand me?
Can you stand me?
Can we stand?
Can you stand
with me?
Can we stand for something?
So we had Professor Royster on the phone, and something happened. Phone died, so we're going to figure that out right quick here. But this is, again, a track from Beyonce's new album. I had a chance to listen to the album the other day in its entirety. 27 tracks on Cowboy Carter, and it takes you a minute to get through, but it is a fascinating romp through a variety of music forms and styles, and Beyonce shows you what she's got. And as Dr. Dyson said, in many respects, she comes with it. No question about it. She comes with it and shows you what she's capable of doing. So I had a chance to listen to all 27 tracks of the day, and she acquits herself quite nicely. But there is a conversation to be had beyond just Beyonce herself about whether or not, once again, this country is finally ready to come to terms with its relationship to black folk and this music. You heard Dr. Dyson say in our last hour that it's not just country music, it's this country's music. Not just country music, but this country's music. That was his take on it. In so many ways, Dr. Dyson believes, as do many of our other fans, I suspect Professor Royster feels the same way, that Beyonce is making an effort to reclaim what has always been ours, to reclaim it. And so in that regard, you have to give her props, give her credit for being courageous and committed and just bold enough to step out and to say, this is me, this is ours, and I'm going to reclaim it. She did that, has done it more than once in her career. She stepped out and made a case for HBCUs and band music. And in so many different iterations of her career, she's stepped forward rather boldly. To reclaim what belongs to us. And I celebrate that part of Beyonce's career. Why? Because I think of jazz, for example. That is our creation. I said on this program a few weeks ago that jazz may very well be our greatest gift to the world, our greatest export to the world. And yet all these years later, we don't celebrate it as we should. We have sort of, I don't want to say this, but it feels like we waved the white flag and we've just given up and surrendered to others this art form, this music form that we, in fact, created called jazz. I said not long ago that when I talked to my friend Wynton Marsalis, Wynton and I have been friends for many decades now, but when I talk to Wynton sometimes, I have to pray for that brother, because I feel for him, because he has expressed to me on more than one occasion what it feels like to be on stage in this country and around the globe, doing what he does so brilliantly, and looking in the audience, and not often enough seeing faces that look like his. And so I feel Wynton's pain every time he says that to me. So this stuff that we create, helped to create, we have to reclaim. And one could argue that Beyonce has put her foot down, put her flag in the ground to reclaim what we have contributed to this music called country. And so when we come forward, we will commence our conversation, I pray and hope, with, there she is. Okay, I see her on the line. We'll commence our conversation with DePaul University Professor Francesca Royster, who'll help us celebrate Black country music, which once again is also the title of her award-winning book. You'll hear her voice when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley.
Ranked number 45 on the Heavy 100 list of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America.
That track is called Most Wanted. It's Beyonce and Miley Cyrus from Beyonce's new project, Cowboy Carter. Once again, it's called Most Wanted. It features the voice of Miley Cyrus. We started this program with a song called American Requiem, 27 tracks on this new project. And we started with American Requiem because as we often do, ask our guests when they're on the talk about certain subject matter, what music they'd like us to commence the conversation with. And so DePaul University Professor Francesca Royster chose that track, American Requiem. Let me start, now that I can hear her, by asking Professor Royster why she chose that track, American Requiem, to begin this hour.
Hi, Tavis. Yes, thank you so much for your patience. I was interested in starting out with American Requiem because it is a kind of a kind of opening, a declaration, kind of a statement of purpose of the album. And to me, it reminds me not so much of country, but of folk music, like songs like Buffalo Springfield, Towards Worth, or Bob Dylan's Blowing in the Wind, where, you know, the album is beginning with this question of, you know, where are we in music history and how Beyonce sees herself as entering into this larger conversation. So it really kind of begins us with this spirit of change that's in the air and the need for change.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to follow you through this hour. That is my way. And so when you say, when you use a phrase like, where are we in music history, that begs a follow-up. So I'll advance this conversation by asking you that question. Where are we in music history?
I think we're really at a very powerful potential place where people are speaking nationally about gatekeeping and erasure in terms of country music and pop music, the kind of hypocrisy of who gets to cross over or who gets to blend musics, which Black artists have always been kind of kept from doing as much, especially in the country realm. And also a place where we're learning more about this genre's Black roots and about contemporary Black country music artists, some of whom are included on this album, but others who aren't there. But, you know, I think it's an important conversation because there's so many voices that we haven't heard yet.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me more about, I'm glad I've got the hour. This is going to be rich. There's a lot to unpack in this hour. So I'm glad,
yeah.
I'm glad we got that phone thing straightened out. Would have been a long hour without you talking about country music by myself. But the question I want to ask now is, to your phrase, gatekeeping and erasure. Tell me more about that. These days, and you can go back historically as far as you want to go back, but in this moment, in late modernity, I'm curious about the gatekeeping and about the erasure. There's been great conversation, which you and I can unpack here in a moment, about Beyonce sort of just, you know, kicking down the door and saying, you know, what she's saying with her project. But talk to me about that notion of gatekeeping and erasure.
Yeah, I mean, we can think about, like, the recent history of Lil Nas X and Old Town Road, the ways that that song was, you know, kind of summarily dismissed as a country music song, despite its like imagery and its instrumentation, in part because I think of what the artist looked like, but also as an outsider to the music industry. I think that one of the reasons that Old Town Road got dismissed in 2019 from the country music charts was partly because it was an album that circumvented the usual processes of having a music played, like, you know, getting music being played on the radio, having a label that is distributing your song. And at least in the beginning, Lil Nas X was kind of distributing the song himself and kind of getting his own collaborators, getting fans. Mm-hmm. And so I think that as much as the way that the song is bringing together hip hop and especially trap with country beats and country storytelling made people mad. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that wasn't so long ago. Or even thinking about like a highly successful recent Black country music star, Mickey Guyton, who had a label, but that label wasn't getting her music out. So she began using her own social media to get her song Black Like Me out after the murder of George Floyd. And that got fan support and eventually kind of nudged her label to get her song played. So I think that we have these examples of very, persistent and creative music stars who are able to gather an audience, but that's kind of pushing against the history of limits and just kind of a perception that Black artists won't be embraced by, especially by primarily white audiences.
Yeah. I could have started this conversation where I ended my dialogue in the last hour with Michael Eric Dyson. I said to Mike, there's great conversation about whether or not the country music industry is or is not embracing Beyonce, is or is not embracing this project. So I asked him point blank, does it really matter? And he said, absolutely not. And Beyonce said it best herself. this is my project, right? This ain't a country album. This is a Beyonce album. That's what she said. That's a quote. It's not a country album. This is a Beyonce album. So she's already kind of put her foot down about that issue, that conversation, that question as whether or not the industry will or should embrace her. So I asked you the same question I asked Mike Dyson. Does it matter, before I move forward to talk about the roots of country, the Black roots of country, does it matter whether the industry embraces her or not?
I agree with you and with Michael Eric Dyson that Beyonce, you know, has her own agenda, artistically, commercially, and otherwise. And the album definitely shows that she's not interested in following a country music formula in order to gather support and acceptance. She's making her own album and bringing together lots of different fans. Mm-hmm. So in that way, yeah, it does matter. This is a Beyonce project, but I think it does matter in terms of musical creativity, in terms of the Black country music artists who are making music right now alongside her, some of whom are featured on the album, because having this conversation about what keeps other artists from being heard and really from being kind of typecast or kept in a small box. But we need to have that conversation, and there needs to be pressure on radio stations in the ways that have happened around this album.
Yeah.
So I have full faith that Beyonce will be successful and continue to be successful, but I think that for the larger cultural conversation and kind of the space for other Black country music artists, this is a moment that's really important.
Yeah. So let me just preface this by saying the following, because I don't want the beehive stinging me all day. So
right.
let me just say up front to all the beehive members, this is not a swipe at Beyonce. It's an intellectual question that I hope you can appreciate. But don't come stinging me today and in the days to come. But let me now that I prefaced it, let me try to frame it. When Barack Obama was elected, and people know that I took a lot of arrows for my commentary during the Obama era, pushing him to do better by Black people. Mm-hmm. That story's been written, and it's prologue now. We're past that part. At least I'm past it. Some people still ain't past it, but I'm past it. but what resonated with me in that moment, there were a number of things, but what resonated with me in that moment with regard to this conversation were people who were, I think, going just a little too far, saying things like, because Obama is now president, that means that my child can do anything. Will Smith and others said that, and I love Will, but a lot of people with major platforms are making comments like that. I was like, slow your roll. Slow your roll. First of all, most white men can't be elected president in this country. So because one black man got elected does not mean that your child can do anything. I know what you mean by that. You are well-intentioned, but in reality, it doesn't mean that just because he did that, that your child can't do anything. Now, that's different than me telling you that your child is not gifted and not talented. I'm not saying that they shouldn't set out to do whatever they want to do. Absolutely. Whatever God called you to do, go for it. But just the fact that he got elected does not mean that black folk can do anything in this country. To the contrary, if I had the time, I can give you a list of things that we still can't do. Even though Obama came and went, and there are still things that we can't do in this country. You probably see where I'm going with this. Now there's all this commentary that Beyonce, with this one album, has opened all these doors wide open to all these other country artists who never got their respect, who are trying to make their way in the business. So I'm not sure I buy that argument because, one, there's no evidence that the industry has embraced her as yet. And if they ain't embraced her, I can't then take the next step to buy the argument that means that everybody black in country is now going to get the respect that they have earned and they deserve. So I don't buy the argument that just because one Negro makes it through, that means everybody else can do whatever they want to do now. You take my point and now you can slap me. Well, don't slap me. You can push back in any way you want, Professor Royster.
Well, I will never slap you, Travis, but I would say that, you know, that there are many terms here that that can be a measure of success. And we're really at a moment culturally where the path to being listened to and gaining an audience for musicians is so much wider now. Mm-hmm. So we have the path of Beyonce, you know, on major levels. But we also have Spotify. We have Apple Music. We have ways that that listeners and audiences can kind of drive listenership beyond the direction of a major production. And I think that is something that's happening right now, especially in terms of hitherto little known or unknown artists, some of whom collaborated with Beyonce on the album, like Raina Roberts and Tanner Adele. And others who are getting hits and listenerships on Spotify and otherwise. So there is, I think, a window for audiences to learn about other musicians and also to learn about the history of this genre, that it's not a transparent musical history, but really one where there has been kind of a creation of what is considered authentic, and that kind of argument about authenticity is shaped by a system of racial segregation. So I think all of those things do matter, and they can change the ways that audiences seek out music or even hear their own stories in the music.
Yeah. So I want to pivot now. That's the Beyonce conversation. That may come back up again here or there, but we've dealt with that part of the conversation. I'm pushing toward your book and your work celebrating black country music. I'm pushing toward that. Before I get to the book, though, and this obviously takes us inside the book, and we got about 3 minutes now. We can continue when we come forward, but at least you can get us started. And the question is simply, talk to me. Tell me more about the black roots of country music.
I would love to. I mean, the black roots of country include the everyday folk music of enslaved folks. I think we've been making music that has fed into the genre of country since we've been here on American soil. The banjo being, a really important vehicle for that, an instrument that has African roots. That was part of everyday life and musicianship. It was part of worship and sacred work. It was part of entertainment for black folks who were enslaved, and also for entertaining their masters. And those instruments, those songs and stories, then, you know, some of them shaped our first commercial musical form, which was, you know, blackface minstrelsy. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really see the creative power of Black artistry in this early part of our nation's history, you know, being warped, and where our agency and control over the narrative of our art forms has been kind of lost. So when country music was first kind of coined, or it was coined as hillbilly music, it reflected a kind of history of racial segregation and marginalization of Black creativity that really has its roots in this vaudeville form, and where Black music was then relegated to what was called race music, and hillbilly music was the music that was presented as this authentically white form, and hillbilly eventually became country western and then country music. So in my book, I'm really thinking about that history, thinking about the harm that is also at the heart of the story of country music, that the erasure of Black creativity also has been done in violent ways. And that is part of the legacy of any debates around what Black contributions to country music have been.
When we come forward, I want to pick up on that point right there. I love the way she framed it. And that's why she's a brilliant professor at DePaul University. As she put it, the harm at the heart of country music. The harm at the heart of country music. But then she was advancing to say that that harm has happened in a number of violent ways. Well, that's the part of the story I want to hear more about. In what ways has this harm been violent when it comes to the Black roots of country music and our contributions to it? She is Francesca Royster. She is University Professor at DePaul. Her book is called Black Country Music. More with her when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Made fresh daily in the Mert Park, Los Angeles, California. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and DePaul University Professor Francesca Royster celebrating her book called Black Country Music. And I'm delighted to have her on this program in this hour. Before I push ahead, I could have commenced our conversation here, but I am curious as to know more about your backstory as a Black woman. I'm always fascinated by academics and how they choose their areas of interest. As a Black woman, how did this become the lane that you're running in?
Thank you for that question. You know, I write about Black popular music, performance. I started as a Shakespeare scholar, and I was really always interested in the stories that were made that have felt invisible, or, you know, places in academia where it felt like, you know, either you had to kind of center whiteness or else you wouldn't be heard, and kind of pushing beyond those. And so when I started working on Black country music, it was really inspired by talking to my dad, who's also a scholar and a musician. And when we lived for a time in Nashville as a kid, my dad was played, you know, bongos and congas on country music albums. There was like a big hunger for Black and Afro-Latino beats and sounds, like in the 70s in the alt country scene. So he was telling me about this, and I realized that I just didn't know a lot about Black country music and Black lives. And I suspected, you know, and I've suspected for a long time that country music is one of many pleasures for Black listeners. And sometimes, you know, we're made to feel ashamed of our interest in country music. But also, like, just knowing a little bit about Ray Charles or Tina Turner or some people like that, that I knew that there was country there, and I just hadn't found those stories. So I kind of went head on into the project, hoping to uncover a history, and really kind of thinking about especially the link between the Great Migration and kind of this distancing by Black people from country music. And where that shame or where that kind of just disinterest might come from. But along the way, I really found that there's been a history of Black folks throughout country music's history, people still making new music, kind of coming up with their own vision of the sound. And then, you know, it felt to me like the industry was kind of catching up with that discovery as well as I was writing. And, you know, Old Town Road came out, Mickey Guyton, as I mentioned, you know, Rhiannon Giddens's work, Song for Our Native Daughters. And suddenly there were musicians within mainstream country music who are Black, as well as kind of this growing presence of artists who are making kind of country adjacent music for Black artists within Americana. And it just felt like it was a moment that was about to explode. So I hurried up and I wrote the book. But to me, the study is really not that different from the work that I was doing as a literary scholar too. And like just thinking about Black representation, stereotypes, and you know, how things are, you know, sometimes threatening to explode around the edges.
Yeah, you mentioned Rhiannon Giddens, one of the, I've been at this for a long time, obviously, in my career. But I remember I may have been one of their first, may have been their first national interview on television when the Carolina Chocolate Drops came out. And I had them on my PBS program many, many years ago, and I had a great time talking to them when they were just pushing out into the mainstream, as it were, of consciousness in this country. And now Rhiannon has gone on to do a bunch of other stuff, great stuff, including being a MacArthur genius. She's doing her thing these days, so I'm mad at her.
Yeah.
But for that matter, I've had a chance to interview Charlie Pride in my career. I've been very blessed to talk to a number of Black folk, Ray Charles, as you mentioned earlier, who have been in this country space, and I've been just kind of blessed to have those conversations, and I'm honored to have this dialogue with you in this hour about your book, Black Country Music. But before I get back to that, I want to pivot for a second because you teased me with something. I'm gonna put you on the spot, and because I know you're a brilliant scholar, you can handle it. But since you mentioned that, so I love. I mean, I say all the time that I say two things all the time. One, my role here every day is to try to make my listeners the smartest person in their circle of friends. Number one, and number two, every day I leave this studio, I am always smarter when I leave than when I came in, and that happens because I am very good. I am very adept at talking to Black people who are a lot smarter than I am every day, and so it's easy to download when you talk to folk who are smarter than you. Hence my conversation with DePaul Professor Francesca Royster. But you mentioned Shakespeare. So you tease me with that. So I'm going to put you on the spot and just ask you a point blank, straightforward question. What does Shakespeare have to say to Black folk?
Well, that is a good question. I think that Shakespeare is really looking at, you know, his characters offer up the chance of thinking about Black interiority, thinking about imaginations. And, you know, he didn't have a lot of Black characters, granted. He had Othello, he had maybe Caliban, depending on how you see him, Cleopatra, in my view. And these are characters where, like, built into the plays is this questioning of who they are, how their identity is being shaped by others, and this tension between what they see for themselves. Really, their freedom and the way that the rest of the world sees them. Aaron Moore might be another one in Titus Andronicus. Mm-hmm. And so so I feel like Shakespeare left room for this kind of more three-dimensional Blackness that, you know, that actors over the years have had a chance to kind of fill in. And James Earl Jones is like a really amazing example of that. But I did find in my study of Shakespeare that it was often relying on what wasn't said or what is a silence. And so I turned to Black music because I wanted to see how artists were exploring some of those same questions about freedom, imaginative freedom, especially in the music, in art that they're creating themselves.
Mm-hmm. See what I mean? Only on this program can you get a scholar who's talking to you in 1 second about Lil Nas and Beyonce and Rhiannon Giddens, and then we pivot to talk about Shakespeare. And she's brilliant. Yeah, she's brilliant no matter the subject matter. Her name is Francesca Royster. She's professor at DePaul University. Her book is called Black Country Music. More with her when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Let's get back to more of this rich dialogue with Tavis Smiley.
With apologies to our guest in this hour, DePaul University Professor Francesca Royster and her book, Black Country Music. There is some breaking news, and we'll get a few more minutes with her when we come forward. But let me do this right now, given that this news is out. We started this program almost 3 hours ago now. talking about Benjamin Netanyahu. We were aware almost 3 hours ago when we started today's program that there was a scheduled phone call between our president, Joe Biden, and Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel. That phone call has happened. That phone call has concluded. And here is the breaking news of what went down in that phone call. Headline in the New York Times and elsewhere, but I'm reading now from the New York Times. Biden tells Netanyahu that U.S. support hinges on treatment of Gaza civilians. Let me read just a few paragraphs from this breaking news story in the New York Times. President Biden threatened on Thursday to condition future support for Israel on how it addresses his concerns about civilian casualties and the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, attempting for the first time to leverage American aid to influence the conduct of the war against Hamas. During an evidently tense 30-minute call with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, Mr. Biden went further than ever before in pressing for change in the military operation that has inflamed many Americans and others around the world. But the White House stopped short of directly saying the president would halt arms supplies or impose conditions for their use, as fellow Democrats have urged him to do. One more paragraph. President Biden emphasized that the strikes on humanitarian workers and the overall humanitarian situation are unacceptable, the White House said in a statement. He made clear the need for Israel to announce and implement a series of specific, concrete, and measurable steps to address civilian harm, humanitarian suffering, and the safety of aid workers. He made clear that U.S. policy with respect to Gaza will be determined by our assessment of Israel's immediate action on these steps. The statement was the sharpest issued by the White House in 6 months of this war, Israel's war against Hamas, underscoring the president's growing frustration with Benjamin Netanyahu, who has defied American pressure to do more to reduce the suffering of civilians in Gaza. The president has strongly and staunchly expressed his support for Israel's right to respond to the October 7th Hamas attacks, but he lashed out this week over the killing of seven aid workers by Israeli military forces. So there you have the breaking news. The president has told Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel that future support from the U.S. Will in fact be conditioned in part on the treatment of these Gaza civilians. Didn't go quite as far as to say that we'll stop sending you weapons if you don't do X, Y, or Z, but it's the closest he's come to that, his strongest words yet. Earlier in this conversation today, in our show, I should say, we talked about the fact that the story out today that Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, the First Lady, has apparently told the president he's got to do more to get this war stopped. And so the White House has been responding today to whether or not there's a chasm, if you will, between the president and the first lady on this war in the Middle East. They're pushing back against that notion. But the story's out that even she has been encouraging him to do more on this war in the Middle East. And so apparently there was a tense phone call between the president and the prime minister, and that is the news that's coming out of that phone call. When we come forward, our remaining moments in this hour, and for that matter in this show, will be spent returning to conversation with DePaul University Professor Francesca Royster about her book, Black Country Music. You're listening, and I'm glad about it, to Tavis Smiley.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Sounds different, huh? This is Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and DePaul University Professor Francesca Royster, to whom I apologize for that breaking news. It happens sometimes in live radio. So my apologies for that breaking news. I want to get back to you in these last 5 minutes in this hour, talking about your book, which we celebrate, Black Country Music. Earlier in this conversation, you talked about the harm and heart, the harm, rather, at the heart of country music, and you started to advance a notion that that's played itself out in some violent ways over the years. In the 5 minutes we have left, tell me more about that, please.
Oh yeah, I would love to. Well, you know, part of that violence is really the way that white supremacy has been kind of supported within the industry, within actual songs. Poet Nikki Finney has this line in her poem Brown Country where she says, these are the hangman's songs. Like, these are songs that often were used to kind of rally people. And an example of that is an early white country music star, Fiddlin' John Carson, was told by his label, and he did it, to play at KKK rallies. Mm. And, you know, some of those ghosts haunt the experiences of black country music artists. DeFord Bailey, Charlie Pride wrote a lot about the experience of racial slurs and threats of violence. Linda Martell also has talked about that in her interviews. And so there's a way that country music has been claimed as a way of kind of embracing nostalgia for older white supremacy, older white models of the South. Mm. And that's been felt like bodily in terms of the experiences of black performers, you know, sometimes on stage in public. But I think the other harm is to all of us because we don't know, we haven't had available a history of continuous black creativity. We have been given stereotypes about our own performances and tastes as well as other things. We've been, you know, held back from being paid for the contributions that we've made in terms of music, more generally country music and popular music. Mm-hmm. So those are just some of the harms that I see.
In the 2 minutes I have left here, Beyonce has ushered us into a conversation. By us, I mean the whole country, ushered us into a conversation about country music, given her project, Cowboy Carter, those 27 tracks that are out now. But beyond Beyonce, what say you about the future of black country music or black folk in country music?
I think really important are the moves of folks like Rissy Palmer, who's a country music artist, who's also a podcaster, mm-hmm. who has worked hard in creating public conversations where black artists and producers are centered, or someone like Holly G, who's also, an organizer and activist who has created this collaborative space for black artists called the Black Opry Review. I feel like the future of country music might be shaped by a mega superstar like Beyonce, maybe in ways that are the most measurable. But I think the collaborative efforts of people who are bringing artists together to work together and also to change the narrative is just as important in terms of the history of ideas that we have.
Well, I thank you for your work and witness in this field and in this regard. It's been an honor to have you on this program. Today, she is DePaul University Professor Francesca Royster. Her book is called Black Country Music. Thank you again for your sharings today, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Tavis.
It's been an honor, an honor to have you on the program. Thank you for your time. Just like that, 3 hours gone. Tomorrow is, what, Friday. So tomorrow, the best of Tavis Smiley on stations across the country will be a great show. We had so much to choose from, so many great shows this week. So if you missed any of it, there's a good chance you can hear some great conversations tomorrow when you tune in to this program. Until tomorrow, thanks for tuning in to Tavis Smiley. And as always, keep the faith.